This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. Welcome. The Senate Education Committee is called to order. I want to welcome people on the internet. Reminder everyone, turn off your cell phones, please, and or any electronic equipment. Secretary, call the roll, please.
Senator Gray. Here. Gerstead. Here. Nisselhoff.
Here.
Olson. Peterson. Knutson. Garnos.
Here. We have a quorum with a majority of the members elect present. The chair will entertain a motion for approval of minutes. It has been moved by Senator Olson, seconded by Senator Gerstad. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The minutes are approved. A couple quick reminders. When you testify, make sure you identify yourself. Come up to the podium. If you have anything that you need to hand out, the pages will help you with that. And please sign in. Also a reminder that all questions go through the committee and the committee chair. On the agenda for today, we're going to start with Senate Bill 112. We're going to defer Senate Bill 118, so when we get to that point, if anyone is here that wants to testify that, we're going to do that on the 10th. We'll do that on the 10th, but if you're not going to be here on the 10th, I'll let you take testimony at that point. Then we're going to move on to Senate Bill 132. That will be second. And then we'll go back up to 126, 145, and 165. So with that being said, Senate Bill 112, this is an act to require that certain student meal plans be offered at public colleges and university. Good morning and welcome. Senator Klochek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Education Committee. This bill, I would ask you today to defer to the 41st day. We do have the constituents' issues are resolved. I was hoping Mr. Moser would be here. He has some issues as well. I've received complaints on this for, oh gosh, going back 6 years, how the student meal plans are run in our public university. I'm aware the problem's not going to go away, but for my purposes at this time, it's been resolved. I worry about the future of our students, such as my niece in the room here today, Susie Klochek, one of the pages. When they go to college, what the cost of their meals are going to be, how those plans are run. The problem is not fixed. The problem is not going to go away, but I think this is the first time in the history of a committee I've ever asked someone to kill my bill. But as MacArthur said, we shall return, and we shall. This needs to be fixed, Mr. Chairman, and I'd be glad to answer any questions. This is an idea that we put together from the constituent, and it's a good, viable idea, and it will be around for a while to find a solution to this. And, of course, just briefly, the solution is the money that the kids are losing when they don't use all of their meal plan. And it's a serious issue for those students and their parents that have to pay for it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Klochek. And we will do proponents, then opponents, and then if there's any further comment, we will move on the bill. So I believe we're still in proponents, even though Senator Klochek wanted his bill killed. We're still in proponents. Any further proponents? Seeing none, any opponents? Any opponents to the bill? Good morning. Welcome, sir.
which means I may want to keep it short. Good morning, Senator Garnos, members of the committee. Monty Kramer with the South Dakota Board of Regents. We have been working with Senator Klochek on this bill. Let me give you a brief background of the issue, and then as Senator Klochek stated, and I've informed him, the issue will not go away, and we do not see this bill as a solution, but let me try to explain that quickly. First of all, we do contract our food service out to vendors. Five of our institutions use Aramark and one uses Aviance. Freshmen and sophomore who live in the residence halls are required to have meal plans, and we do that because we feel that we have an obligation to ensure that students are eating regular meals when they live under our housing. The meal plan pricing is targeted so that the students will have regular meals, and that the total cost of those over a semester will provide sufficient dollars so that they can eat regular meals. Students can carry their balances from one semester to the next. Balances held at year end will be lost, or if a student decides to not to return to school, they will lose the balances, and I think that's what's brought this issue in front of you today. We have meal plan contracts for a reason. The vendors actually have to have a revenue stream in order to make the meal plans work. If What they do is they establish the number of employees they have and the amount of food they're going to make and the inventory they're going to carry based on the number of contracted meals that we have. We have altered our meal plan significantly over the years, where students have more flexibility. They can buy in convenience stores. They can buy specialty items. They can pretty much eat round the clock, buying pizza in their rooms and a number of things which students have wanted, flexibility in the meal plans. The issue here is that, and I've been in with the board for approximately 25 years. This issue has come up in the past. I believe since I've been back in the board office the second time around, I've handled about 4 complaints in the last 9 years. Now, that doesn't mean that they're all getting to the board office. Obviously, the campuses are handling these issues, and thankfully, I think they're addressing the problem. I want to give you an example of this particular situation. The meal plan cost was approximately $1,033 for the entire semester. That's $9.84 a day for that student to eat. Or if they don't eat on the weekend, it's $14.15 a day for a 5-day plan. The student used an average of $3.87 a day over the semester, so obviously they were not eating regular meals. The state provides you and I, when we go out and eat for a full day, $26 a day. So I don't think what we're asking the student to pay for a meal plan is excessive. The problems with the bill, if the students are offered what is proposed in Senate Bill 112, we would not have a revenue stream for the food vendors, and clearly the vendors would pull out of their contracts because they would not have a revenue stream that they could rely on to buy the food items and to prepare the foods and to staff up. Most of the students are going to buy the minimum on a meal plan, and we're afraid what they will do then is they will keep their money or spend their money, and they won't have any money to eat. The food service operations are part of our revenue bonded indebtedness. The facilities that we serve food in the student unions, there is revenue within these meal plans that goes to pay for those bonds. If this bill were to pass, we would default on millions of dollars worth of bonds. So those are the problems with the bill. And as I said, I've already met with all of the vice presidents from the universities to try to address this. We've talked with the food vendors, and they're saying that if we have to give refunds to all the students who decide not to eat on campus, there's just no way that they can make the food service work. So I'd stand by for any questions.
Thank you very much. Further opponents of Senate Bill 112. Further opponents? Committee members, any questions of proponents or opponents? Committee members? Senator Klochek, 1 minute. Okay, thank you. Yeah, real quickly, 1 minute. You bet. Yeah. For a rebuttal letter.
Monty spoke the truth and nothing but the truth. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for clearing that up. Chair closes the public hearing on Senate Bill 112. It's open for committee discussion and or action. Senator Peterson. It has been moved by Senator Peterson, seconded by Senator Nesselhoff, to move this bill to the 41st legislative day. And for those that aren't familiar with that term, that would effectively kill the bill. Any further comment on that? Seeing no discussion, there is a motion before us to move this bill to the 41st legislative day. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Gray, Gerstead,
aye.
Nesselhoff,
aye.
Olson,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Knudsen, Gernos,
aye. Having received a majority vote of the members elect, Senate Bill 112 has moved to the 41st legislative day.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Honorable members of the committee.
Thank you, Senator Klochek. Before we move on to Senate Bill 132, once again, Senate Bill 118, we're going to defer that until Tuesday, February 10th. If there's anyone in the room that wants to testify on that bill that will not be here on Tuesday, we would certainly take that up. Okay, seeing none, let's move to Senate Bill 132. This is an act to exempt certain school districts from the requirement to reorganize due to low enrollment. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, my name is Larry Nelson. I'm a registered lobbyist for the Greater Scott and Greater Hoyt School Districts. Senator Gillespie has asked me to inform the committee that we are working with the Department of Education on a solution and is requesting that the bill be deferred.
Thank you. Before we defer the bill, are there any further proponents of Senate Bill 132? Again, this will be deferred to a later date. Any further proponents? Any opponents? Seeing none, committee members? While we have Mr. Nelson here, do you have any questions for him at the current time? Again, we will for this? Okay, we'll save those. Okay, any rebuttal or any further comment? Okay, the chair will defer this Senate Bill 132 to a further date, and we'll look at next Tuesday, but we'll be flexible with that. Thank you very much. The committee will be at ease for a few minutes. We're waiting for Senator Dave Knutson to come on Senate Bills 145 and 126. And Pages, if you would go find Senator Adelstein, we'll try to do Senate Bill 165. Thank you. Once again, committee, we'll be at ease for a few minutes here. 165. Get Senator Adelstein. Okay. Good work. No, we're still waiting for Senator Knutson. Okay. Senate Education Committee will come back to order, and again, I want to welcome the people on the Internet. We are going to move to Senate Bill 126. Senate Bill 126 is an act to revise certain provisions regarding school attendance. Welcome, Senator Knutson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave Knutson, State Senator from Sioux Falls. Apologize for being a little late, but I had two bills in the Senate Judiciary Committee that they were kind enough to take up first thing. Senate Bill 126 is, to some extent, a work in progress, and I think as you hear the testimony today, you'll probably, or I anticipate, we'll hear some real issues that perhaps need to be resolved before we can move this bill forward. But a couple years ago, we adopted a mandatory age 18 requirement where we said that students or children have to attend school until age 18. This was an increase from 16 to 18. We put in the delayed effective date on that. Since then, there have been, I think, concerns about having students in the classroom that don't want to be there, conceivably could be disruptive. I think the schools have had some nervousness about this. On the other hand, we know that there's probably no demographic that is more important in terms of just talking about quality of life, whether you're talking about income or satisfaction kinds of polls, having a high school diploma. If you don't have a high school diploma, it is a very uphill road in life for most people. So it becomes very important to try and keep students in school and making progress towards a high school degree. Earlier, this committee heard a bill to just repeal the age 18 requirement, which I think is a mistake. On the other hand, today we have in many communities across South Dakota very successful programs, typically operated by voluntary or nonprofit agencies, where young people, 16 to 18 and much older, can both be working and studying in a fairly controlled environment, working for their GED, the high school equivalent degree. Basically, if the age 18 law remains in place unchanged, the 16 and 17-year-olds will not be able to attend those work-study programs. And this bill is an attempt to try and make it permissible for students to, instead of being enrolled in a traditional high school, to be enrolled in a GED program. I think there will be testimony kind of describing these programs, but they're not just I show up when I want. They are controlled, structured situations. They do give the students an opportunity to be employed probably in a more substantial way than they would if they were attending traditional high school. I think there are some concerns on how this plays into No Child Left Behind, where the bill contemplates that these students could be viewed, if they're going into one of these structured GED programs, would be treated as a transfer student, not a dropout. There are some concerns I believe the Department of Education will raise. As I say, I think this idea, I believe, has great merit to give us some alternatives, additional alternatives for these students that don't flourish in the traditional high school. But there may be some, the testimony may well show that there are still some features to be worked out in this bill, and I think even if people are showing up as opposed to it, I think they're probably going to testify in a constructive way. So with that, stand by.
Thank you, Senator Knutson. Any further proponents? Senate Bill 126. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Judith Roberts. I'm legal and legislative counsel for the Unified Judicial System. I am here on behalf of the Chief Justice to testify in support of Senate Bill 126. We are concerned with the way the current statute reads, which is going to into effect July 1st, 2009. Because it does not allow for any type of graduate equivalency degree program. UJS, Court Service Officers, and most people know them by the common name probation officers, are responsible for providing probation supervision to juveniles who might come to the attention to the court through what we call a CHINS petition. CHINS stands for Child in Need of Supervision. That happens when a child, teenager, is truant, or there's truancy issues, and as a result, they're placed under our supervision or our CSO's supervision. Not all students are suited for traditional classroom educational opportunities, and we believe that disallowing students the ability to obtain a graduate equivalency degree, high school degree, is a disservice to our youth by setting them up to fail. Youth entering the court system for truancy issues are many times those youth who do not fit into the traditional public or non-public classroom setting. Without a graduate equivalency degree program as an option in the statute, our court service caseloads statewide could conceivably increase by as many as 500 to 700 truant referrals per year. This is a particularly of high concern because the fiscal impact that it would have on our programs, and just our court service officers already have such a tremendously high load, where it could be easily rectified by including an equivalent degree program or opportunity, GED type of program opportunities, into the bill. If a student is not successful in attending a traditional classroom setting, we will see this type of increase from 500 to 700 referrals. Allowing a GED option to the current statute would allow some flexibility to the statute, and we will believe will increase the number of students who achieve success in obtaining an equivalent high school degree, and will also meet the important intent of this law, and which is to ensure that our youth gain a proper education and succeed in life. With that, I urge passage of Senate Bill 126, and we'll stand by to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Further proponents of Senate Bill 126. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dick Thiessen. On behalf of the Sioux Falls School District, we would encourage you to give this a serious thought. We need to remember that these children who have left the typical classroom have left because they no longer have found it to be the right kind of challenge for them. We think that the GED ability and the graduate equivalency degree is an important part of the recipe of success for the 18-age compulsory attendance. Because without it, those children have left school because they're no longer challenged. They don't feel that there's anything there for them, or at least there's nothing there that they find interesting. many of them do find their way to their GED through these additional programs that are available. And I think that if we don't find a way to make every possible mechanism available to them, we will see that we will lose more of them. And I think it is clearly part of our responsibility to find a way to challenge those students who may have already left and now are going to have to return because of the compulsory attendance law. So we believe that 126 is an important bill and that it provides an important alternative for those who have left, and that we need to find a new way to challenge again.
Thank you. Any further proponents? Senate Bill 126. Any further proponents? Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman and panel members. My name is Wes Storm. I'm on the Rapsody School Board, and I stutter, but I'll still be brief, so just be patient. But again, thank you. I'm here in support of 126. As I stated, it gives us some opportunities to work with students who have some problems. Some kids are at risk. They need another way to get through school. Some kids that are 16 and 17 may have 3 or 4 credits. They cannot go back in and get the 22 to graduate. The GED is perfect for them. Currently, we have 165 students who are working on their GED, and they work at least 12 hours a week. Some of these kids are married. Some have families. Some have 2 jobs. Some just don't care for a traditional school. It's a way to get them a diploma. And without that, they can't serve in the service. They can't drive a truck, I don't believe. There are several things that would hold them back. It just gives the probation, the courts, you heard her, it gives her it gives them a chance to tell the kid, if you aren't going or if you're off probation, you have to go back and work on a degree. It gives them at least some leverage to get them back to us. Sometimes when we have kids go back and forth between schools, we kind of lose them. And if it wasn't for the courts, they would just get scrambled and lost. So I would urge you from the RFC school to support 126. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Storm. Any further proponents of Senate Bill 126? Good morning.
Good morning, Senator Garnos and committee members. My name is John Peterson. I'm the executive director for school administrators, and I think it's important that I step forward and speak on this bill, and we are in support of it. Naturally, there's some areas that we're concerned about, but I want to go back. You know, when the stay in school till 18 thing came about, school administrators, and I think any educator would support that. We know that in this day and age, you have to have an education to be successful. And we were reluctant to step forward with our concerns, but the concerns were centered around the new opportunities that needed to be available for these students if we were going to be successful in keeping everybody in school till 18. And I know we talk a lot about money, unfortunately, but if we're gonna bring these kids back in and if we're gonna keep them in school, we need the funds available to provide them some other opportunities, such as technical and vocational and some of these issues. And so when I look and when we look at this, it's just another opportunity for these kids to be successful. You know, to just bring them back into the regular schools and say, hey, you know, you're going to stay in school till you're 18 or you're going to get it or you're going to receive a diploma. That's not going to work, folks. We have to have some other options. I wish that everyone would get a high school diploma. I'm not sure that GED is best for everyone, but it's certainly better than not having anything at all. I realize or I understand there's a question about them being considered a dropout with no child left behind. That concerns us. That certainly concerns us, and I think that has to be worked out. But you know, we support providing as many options as we possibly can for the students. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further proponents? Senator Bill 126. Good morning, Representative Sly.
Good morning, Education Committee. I'm here speaking as an individual, and many of the things that I had down needed to be covered. They have already been covered, and I would echo those same testimony that has been presented. But I will cover just a couple more things that I have thought of. The needs of the students are not just the responsibility of the school district. We also have parents involved, a probationary system, the student themselves, and I do believe that we need to keep this at local control as much as possible. Some current concerns have been expressed to me that, well, how are we going to do this? How are we going to keep track of them? And how, you know, what if they don't keep coming to school or working on their GED? And I believe those things can be worked out within the community. And I would have one suggestion with this, it's that maybe some language could be added that something that I know that happens in Rapid City, in order for them to be considered that they are regularly attending, they have to have a minimum, be attending their GED classes a minimum of 12 hours weekly. Otherwise, they are considered not actively involved in that process. And that might be something to consider that could be added to that if that is a concern. I do believe, I did look up last night on the internet some things that affect students if they do not have a GED or a high school diploma. And I too would prefer a high school diploma. I don't want to look at this as though it's a cop-out for our school districts to be able to just say, well, we'll just send them on for their GED. I think this should be a last resort to have these children receive that. You cannot get your CDL to drive a truck if you do not have a high school diploma or a GED. You cannot join the military if you do not have a high school diploma or a GED. And then your options are even more limited, and only a certain percent. I found out that the Air Force will admit less than 1% who only have a GED. Marines, 5%. Army, 10%. Navy, 5 to 10%. But the GED would give those students that possibility that they could join the military down the road if that's the way that they were going to receive their diploma. I believe that this option of working and having the GED as a possibility in our compulsory attendance is just one more piece of the puzzle, because we're working on this. I know that schools a lot of times feel like this is going to be a burden on them, and I do think they need to continue to working towards way to meet the needs of these students. But as the probationary system, they have talked about it, that if they come through the court system, maybe they've dropped out of school, got lost in the rolls, whatever, of any particular school they come through, that is one option that they can have, that they will say, you will be working on your high school diploma. I think that we need to look at this not just as dollars, because if they do become a transfer student, it may be that that school district does not receive the dollars, but I think we need to look at the best interest of those at-risk students in our state and to be able to provide another option for them. I will stand by for questions if you have them.
Thank you very much. Further proponents, Senate Bill 126, further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 126? Any opponents? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Wade Pogany from the Department of Education. Senator Knutson, I'm grateful that you brought this discussion. I think this is an important discussion to have and talk about options for students. And let me say, first of all, that the department is not opposed to options under 18. As you know, we've been proponents of the 18 legislation and have worked very hard since that passage to try to find as many options as we can. And I want to talk with you a little bit about those options, first of all. And then I want to tell you about some real hard problematic things with the bill that we struggle with in terms of how we would even do this. And there's some legalities, I think, that we'd like to find a solution here, but they're difficult. The first thing I would tell you is that I'm extremely proud of the work that the school districts have done since the passage of 18. There have been hundreds of conversations about how to meet the needs of at-risk kids. And I can tell you from being a former principal, this is a hard topic. Working with at-risk students and trying to find alternative means, trying to find ways for them to be successful is an extremely difficult conversation. But it's been a conversation that's happened. Let me give you a couple of examples. we've had discussions around the state about alternative education, alternative schools, how to expand alternative schools, where they are. Our friends in the Chester, Madison, Howard area are talking about expanding their alternative program to be more of an academic academy. As a matter of fact, you passed legislation out of this committee that expanded the multi-district concept to include an academy concept. That all stemmed from the discussion about 18. That's one option. We've encouraged schools and we've talked to principals around the state to look at other options for students that may not be, that are better options for them than being in the classroom. Things like online learning, some of the virtual school learning, internship programs. We've been providing and promoting as many different options for schools to look at. And I know that we have currently well over 66 different alternative schools in our state, and they're looking at how they can work in different ways. We met with the folks from Sioux Falls and talked to Mr. Smith and said, what are some things happening there? And they have a tremendous game plan for how they're going to address this. Bill told me about the counseling program that they have in their schools where there are dedicated counselors that work directly with at-risk kids, especially 16 and 17-year-olds. We had conversations with Rapid City, and one of the things that we really promoted was this notion that working with at-risk kids is not just a school problem. This is entirely a community-based problem. And I was so impressed with the Rapid City folks because they had their probation officers together, they had their alternative education people, their administrators. They were asking questions of us about, I thought it was interesting, they wanted to know how flexible will the department be in alternative instruction? Because we can envision a day when a student may never set foot in a four-walled classroom. They may be in a work-based kind of approach, or an internship, or online, or a variety of options. And Rapid City is working on a plan to do some things too. My point, Mr. Chairman, is that I think the school districts have embraced this. They've worked toward finding as many options as they can, and understandably, GED could be an option. We'll get to the legality of that later. But I guess I'd like to ask you to let 18 work. It's been on the books for 2 years. Schools have tackled the issue. Are we completely there yet? No. We have a ways to go, but I'm so proud of the work that they've done. Secondly, let me talk a little bit about the logistics of the bill itself. The first area you want to look at, though, is the very beginning. It repeals Chapter 98 of the 2000 session law, and technically that is the compulsory attendance 18 bill. If you pass this bill, you've repealed 18, I think, the way I read that. And the other part is a key part, too, that also includes the changes that you made 2 years ago on the kindergarten statute. And that's included in that, too. So if we repeal that, we've got to clean up the kindergarten issue there. I think the issue, though, that I struggle to find a solution for is the fact that the bill talks about something called the graduate equivalency degree, and that's not what GED is. GED is technically the general education development. That's what GED stands for. And GED is actually a testing company. The federal government works through the state departments of labor, and they provide a test, a GED test, that in essence says that there is a certificate that a student would receive if they pass this program. Now, Department of Labor in our state and in many states, I'm assuming all states, have something that we call the Adult Education Literacy Programs. These are the programs that Senator Knutson referred to where non-traditional students go, receive further instruction, and there are specific components in each test, reading and writing components and a variety of other skills that are in the GED test itself. It's not a diploma. It's not a degree. It is a testing company that provides this test nationwide, and it really stems from the fact that if a student, a young person, can't get a diploma, they would at least have workforce-based skills that would make them prepared and ready for the workforce. And so that's how GED came about. Now, here's the logistical problem with this, is that GED testing company will not allow a student to take a test, their test, unless they've been unenrolled from the school. And technically, for 16 or 17, you can't be unenrolled from the school. You have to be enrolled because of the compulsory attendance law. So the soonest that you could take the GED test would be age 18, and that's when the law would allow you to leave school anyway. So we really have a logistical problem here in terms of how you would take the test. The other issue is the Department of Labor has moved their adult education and literacy program to be an 18-plus program. And we've moved this because of the fact that compulsory attendance would not allow 16, 17-year-olds to be in the program anymore because they have to be enrolled in school. If they're not, they're truant. And so that has moved the Department of Labor to move that program to be 18 and above. So there really is a logistical issue there that I'm not sure how we resolve. The other issue that we have is that under No Child Left Behind, it's very clear from the regulations that a school district could not count a GED certificate. Even if we could do all these things, we can't count a GED certificate toward their graduation rate. A student that would be in a GED program or receive a certificate, if we could do it, would not count toward graduation rate under NCLB. And so that would be a negative against the school district. We actually called Zali Stevenson, who is with the Department of Education. Zali is the Director for Student Achievement and School Accountability. And it's very clear in the Federal Register that students enrolled in the GED program may not be counted as having transferred out for the purposes of calculating graduate rate. And that's right in the Federal Register. We also have some concerns about the transferability because and I'm not exactly sure how that would work, but we think that if a student transferred out into a program like this, we'd have some problems with paying that student or how we would pay for that student in terms of state aid. And so, Senator, I appreciate the discussion about this. We appreciate the fact that we, too, want to find as many alternatives as we can to help at-risk students, and we think we're moving in that direction and trying to help schools. It is a tough issue. It's a tough problem, but we really are concerned about some of the legalities of what this kind of a program would put in place. Mr. Chairman, I will stand by for any questions that you might have and wait your final approval.
Thank you very much. Further opponents of Senate Bill 126, further opponents? Are there any further opponents? Seeing none, questions from the committee of proponents or opponents? Make sure, again, you come up to the microphone. Senator Olson.
I have a question for Senator Knutson, actually. On Section 3, lines 12 and 13 of the bill, it defines, the GED or whatever equivalent that is of what type of institute that is. But I'm a name brand kind of guy. Can you give me an example of some schools that are accepted from around the region and the state that these students would be able to attend as part of this?
Senator Knutson.
I cannot. I was hoping that I had originally thought that we were going to have testify today someone from the program as it operates in Sioux Falls. It's operated by the Volunteers of America that could describe their existing program. And I'm sorry that they weren't able to attend. And also the curriculum director from the Sioux Falls School District, Bill Smith, is, I think, quite knowledgeable in this area, and I had anticipated that he was going to attend as well, and so I was a little surprised by the absence of some key testifiers, but I cannot answer your question, Senator Olson.
Committee, any further questions and or discussion? I have a question for Mr. Peterson, if I may. I just wanted to get a little, your background, I know you were Superintendent Beersford and, of course, the Pierce School District, but in terms of the Pierce School District, when we look at options and finances, Pierre, Rapid City, Sioux Falls, they're probably in areas where they have better resources, where they can, deal with a situation like this. When you were superintendent at the Pierce School District, was it a big problem, and was there an option, and what was that here in Pierre, and how did that work?
Well, what we did in Pierre, one option that we had, like several schools in South Dakota, we have an alternative high school. So our students went to the alternative high school. There also, through the alternative high school, there was an opportunity to get GEDs. And then naturally, we, like all schools in South Dakota, we struggled to provide an appropriate education for all kids, and we tried to, you know, come up with some different vocational opportunities for these students. So that's what we did, you know, and the main thing would have been the alternative high school.
So if I refer to the bill, I mean, is this needed? I mean, when you talked about the resources that you had here in Pierre, and did many kids fall through the cracks?
Well, yes. I mean, you know, I guess five kids are too many that fall through the cracks, okay? I mean, so that's not the issue. But were there kids in Pierre that dropped out of school and did not pursue further education? Yes. And now, with the new laws that we have now, stay in school till 18, and as I said earlier, we support that. Everybody has to have an education. But I'm just not sure that the way we're set up today that we can meet the needs of all students. I mean, it's going to be tough to do it. It really is. And that's why I go back with the GED. I think, you know, and I can't speak for Pierre anymore, but I think this would be a good option for just a very few Pierre students.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Any further questions from the committee of proponents or opponents? Senator Gerstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Fugoni. Good morning.
Good morning.
You bring some, I think, very legitimate concerns to light with this bill. I'm wondering if you, in your mind and with the other folks in the department, have thought about maybe that this bill could be changed in any way, or is it, in your mind, is it just, you know, it's something that needs to be defeated? Because of the problem of the 18, the first chapter being deleted, and also just because of the how, you know, the logistics of getting things done in terms of the GED.
Yeah, we have. We looked at the bill, and as always, you try to find some common ground that you could have. And I think for myself, I think you have to take out the pieces that repeal the session laws, obviously, because that defeats the purpose. But the other part that logistically we tried to work through was, are there any other ways that the kids could take the test, 16 or 17? And that's not for us to decide. That's through the GED mechanism. And so I'm not sure how to solve that problem. Now, I will tell you that we've done some things in the department to try to make the course requirements and I should say some of the logistics of alternative instruction better. The Carnegie unit discussion that we had at the state board level, some of those things. And it was interesting because when I met with the Rapid City folks, their greatest concern was flexibility in courses. And we talked about an interesting concept. We said, if a student is in an alternative education program and they're working on something that would be, I call it GED-like, you know, a curriculum that would be similar to what they would have had in a career center that they would be taking a GED program. The Department of Labor calls it Adult Education and Literacy Program. But if the school district did something like that in an alternative program, do they have the flexibility to do that? And the answer is yes. They can determine their own curriculum right now and what they want to do. So they just wanted to know from us, do they have the blessing of the department, the flexibility to do that? And obviously we said yes. So we've been trying to work in that direction. At the same time, though, those students, if truly the end outcome was not a diploma, because understandably some kids just don't have enough credits to get to that diploma because they're going to turn 18, et cetera. But we said at the point they turn 18 then, the rules and regulations of the Department of Labor and the testing company would allow them to take the GED test at that stage. And so their plan was, as far as I knew from that discussion, was to do something internal that was GED-like and then have the kids take the test at 18, because knowing full well they may not be able to graduate. They may not have enough credits to do that. So we were thinking from our perspective that even though that doesn't give, the bill gives 16 or 17-year-olds the option for GED, we think that is a pretty viable alternative in an alternative school setting. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I think that's the best approach that we can come up with to solving this problem.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wade, if we go to... this bill really deals with a couple of different topics. If we go through lines 19 through 24, we find that we're overstriking the waiver for compulsory attendance for children under the age of 7 at the request of parents that are granted.
Right.
And we're requiring that everybody has to attend kindergarten before the age of 7. Do you see a problem with this part of the bill?
Our position would be to continue with the current kindergarten requirement as it is. I didn't address the kindergarten issue. I'm just hoping that we can go back to the original position of where kindergarten was 2 years ago. It's in that stage, at that point, what the legislature did, what you folks did, was you said, in essence, that kindergarten was required at that stage because it wasn't at that point. But we didn't change the age issue. This judge changed the age issue. So our position would be to keep it the way it is.
Any further questions? Any further questions? Once again, this is for my clarification. I mean, at the current time with the current law going into effect at 18, I mean, do you feel that, you know, South Dakota, we're moving forward in terms of the direction where we talked about, you know, different districts maybe combining and do some academy work and things like that? I mean, are we going in the right direction in terms of that? And, I mean, is it enough at the current time?
Yes, and I'm hopeful. We are moving in that direction. This whole notion about technical academies, alternative schools with technical school components in them, I strongly believe that that's the right direction. And some other things that we're doing within the department to change rules and regulations that allow that to happen even more. We don't want to be a barrier to moving that direction. Is it enough? I don't know if it's enough yet. I know that we're moving in that direction, and I would say we need to do even more. But we've really started to cultivate some conversations along that line and helping school districts that want to pursue that. And so by knocking down some regulations, trying to be as flexible as we can, trying to offer assistance in developing those academies, we're doing that now. We're doing that today.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Any further questions? Senator Knutson, minute if you want to have a response.
Well, I think some of the discussion is a little confused, quite frankly, because, again, if you look on page one of this bill, section three basically incorporates the change that is made by section one of chapter 98 of the 2007 accession laws. Again, you see in line seven, it refers to age 18. So when Mr. Pogany suggests that this repeals the age 18, that's not true. What this does is this reprints exactly, word for word, what Section 1 of Chapter 98 says, with the exception of the underlined language, which is the attempt to adjust this age 18 requirement for a GED-type program. Similarly, the language in Section 5, again, is also just a, again, that becomes effective. You can see on the, in Section 6, Section 5 becomes effective July 1, 2010. That is word for word insofar as it relates to kindergarten. Word for word what the existing chapter of that was adopted in 2007 for an effective date of 2010, again, with the only change being the lines 15 through 18 on page 2, so that the changes related to kindergarten are already in statute. They're with these effective dates of July 1, 2009, July 1, 2010. So there is no changing with regard to kindergarten. There's really no changing with regard to age 18. Is just the new language about allowing the pursuit of the GED degree. Again, I was hoping that the committee could have testimony from people who are actively involved in operating these programs. I think this bill does need to be deferred and perhaps scheduled for another hearing, and I'll try and make certain that we get some of the people that I think are necessary. And I recognize that the NCLB issue is a real one. But again, I think there are at least people that believe the problem is soluble. And again, if the Department of Labor has changed its program to deal only with 18 and above, it strikes me that it maybe makes sense to change it back so it can deal with 16 and 17-year-olds as well as age 18. Again, I think the right thing for the committee to do is to defer action on this bill, but I don't think it's an idea that should be dismissed.
Chair closes the public hearing on Senate Bill 126. Committee members, I think we're still early enough, too, if we can bring more people in to talk and to get more of an expertise in terms of some of these programs that people are actually working on, I think it would benefit the committee. With that being said, is there any comment on that? Seeing no comment, I would defer Senate Bill 126 until a later date. Up next on the agenda, we'll keep Senator Knutson busy here, is Senate Bill 145. This is an act to prohibit the transfer and subsequent expenditure of certain monies appropriated to state aid to general and special education without specific legislative authorization. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave Knutson from Sioux Falls. Senate Bill 145 really is a pursuit of a concept championed by Jerry APA, the immediate past chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee. Some might find it unusual that I would be joining Senator APA in a particular policy matter, but I think that the Senate Bill 145, which I think is a bottom line, needs to go to the Appropriations Committee members. But I think that the basic concept is, for a long time, certainly starting in Governor Janklow's administration, there was practice, and I think it's a normal and of necessity practice, to be conservative in estimating the amount of money that was needed to support K-12 education under our state aid formula and under the special education formula, so that we didn't ever want to be in a position where we ran out of funds and had to prorate to schools less than they were entitled. So there was a natural tendency to overestimate the amount of funds needed. I think over the years, the size of that overestimation has diminished. We've gotten more precise, but there still are funds left over every year in the state aid formula silo, if you will, and the special education pot. And those have been used for other programs, probably perhaps most controversial recently, the laptop program. What this bill would say is, to the extent in those two categories where we know there's just a chronic sort of necessity overestimation, and so you will always have money left in the bottom of those pots, requires that just to be reverted back to the general fund rather than expended for other activities. And that's rubbed and scrubbed what Senate Bill 145 does.
Thank you, Senator Knutson. Any further proponents on Senate Bill 145? Any further proponents? Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll be very brief. My name is Dick Thiessen. On behalf of Sioux Falls School District, we support this. There's always been this issue or concern about identifying these dollars and whether these dollars are being reverted back to the general fund. We support it because we think putting those dollars back in the general fund will better able you to determine what you have given K-12 and what you should give K-12.
Thank you. Any further proponents, Senate Bill 145? Any further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 145? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tammy Darnell with the Department of Education, and I come here in opposition of Senate Bill 145. First of all, I'd like to share a couple of concerns with you that I have about this bill on whether I would still be able to do certain items. For example, 133748.1 allows us to pay for LEP development shortfalls in the Part C program, which is birth to three, and technology purchases for children with disabilities. Some of these items require us to transfer funds to other areas, such as the birth to three budget, in order to do that. However, this statute specifically says that I would not be able to transfer these funds. We can and we have gone to this fund, to the special education budget in the past, to help pay for Part C costs. In the transition, well, you guys know that Part C is on the chopping block right now, but you know, that's just an example of items that I'm concerned about not being able to do, the LEP development and also the technology purchases. Also, I have some concerns. I read this several times, and I keep going back and forth, but would this affect our ability to carry over our 5.75% from the Special Education Fund for extraordinary costs? That's in 1337-40. Also, I would like to address Senator Knutson's comments about our conservativeness in budgeting. We try our best each year to hit the targets. In fact, in 2008, we were short of funds, and we had to come back to the legislature and ask for more funds in state aid. At that time, we did not have any additional dollars in special education to transfer forward because we did not know at that time what our extraordinary cost fund would be. So that would not allow us to do that anymore. We could not transfer from special education up to state aid if there were a shortfall, or vice versa. This year, I have a very real concern that we're going to be short in extraordinary costs. I probably have enough to cover this year, but when we prepared the budget for next year, we always assume that we're going to have that 5.75 to carry over. I don't think I'm going to have it this year. So I would possibly be looking at transferring some dollars from state aid to general education down to state aid to special education. In the past, I know there have been some transfers out of these funds. I know there have been concerns, but really look at what they've been for. They've been for birth to three. They've been for statewide assessment. These are programs that we need to do. If we did not have this flexibility to work within our budget, we would have to look at being less conservative in our budgeting in other areas because we would know that we would not be able to come to these areas. I ask that you oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents? Senate Bill 145. Further opponents? Seeing none, short response from the sponsor, Senator Knutson. I'm sorry, let's go questions from committee or proponents. Or opponents. Any questions from the committee? Any questions at the current time? Senator Gerstadt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Tammy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Did I hear you correctly in terms of when you budget, you don't know what to budget for 0 to 3 or for special ed quite, and so you have to depend on the overlap from education? I'm just wondering how that all works.
No,
that's what I heard.
I'm sorry. That's not what I was saying. If it came across that way, I'm sorry. No, we budget, but we budget conservatively. I mean, we look at the growth for birth to 3, and again, I know birth to 3 is a bad example because we don't know what's going on with that, but I'm just looking at the past. In birth to 3, we project a certain growth in the number of kids, and because we have no control over those services, we project the average growth or cost of services per child and try to project it forward. However, in the past several years, past 3 or 4 years, we've had more and more kids come on, and the amount of services that we've received or they have received and the cost per services has increased significantly more than what we thought they would have been. But each year we try to find, instead of going, if you look at the trend, instead of going on the high end of the trend, usually, I don't know how much you know about trend analysis, but you kind of have a high, a low, and then kind of an average trend. We look in the low to average trend area instead of going in the high because we're trying to be conservative with state dollars.
Senator Gerstadt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And so why is it that you have to depend on the education dollars? Why can't you depend on, you know, this? We're not talking about a lot of money here. I think the funding for 0 to 3 is somewhere around $330,000.
No, it's in federal dollars, it's $2.1 million. In state dollars for this year, it's $1.8 million.
And why you can't, just go to the general fund for a backup if you need it. Why do you have to depend specifically on the education fund for the backup for that particular program?
We would look within, by law, we can only look within the Department of Education for this. Besides state aid and funding for the technical institutes, we have very few general funds in our budget. We have the funds for the Birth to Three. We have the funds for the statewide assessment. We have some funds for state library, which are very limited, but I don't have a lot of flexibility in my budget. In fact, this year, I have great concerns in my budget. It's not...
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's not that we budget planning, oh, we can go there, but if a contingency if something comes up, it is helpful to have that contingency. And I know your next comment is going to be, well, we can come to the legislature if we know that. A lot of the stuff we might not know until April or May, because, again, with Birth to Three kids, and, again, I know that program may go away, but with Birth to Three kids, you don't know from month to month for sure because we have to take everybody that comes on.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee of proponents or opponents? Any further questions? I'm seeing none. Short response, Senator Knutson.
I think this properly goes to the Appropriations Committee. It's really more into the mechanics of their process. But I would note that, I think the most recent substantial expenditure out of these types of funds was for the laptop program, which I don't believe ever did receive a legislative approval as a specific program. And I think the concern about the Birth to Three program is fair, because I'm quite confident this legislature will continue that program. It is a little odd coming from the administration, which wished to kill that program in total.
The chair closes the public hearing on Senate Bill 145. It is now open for committee discussion and or action. Senator Gerstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if we might not handle this ourselves and give the folks on the floor a chance to discuss this. Seems to me like appropriations have an awful burden of bills right now, and this might be a good discussion to have on the floor. I'm wondering about what the sponsor might feel about that.
Senator Knutson.
Mr. Chairman, I note that the chair, both the Senate chair and the House chair of appropriations and the vice chairs of appropriations, both the House and Senate, are co-sponsors of this bill, so I don't think it's going to go to appropriations to be deep-sixed. And I do think, again, Ms. Darnell had some points. I would certainly say she ought to come with amendments if she has particular concerns with some pieces of this. But I think the Appropriations Committee is better able to deal with the nuance if this bill needs any amending. So if it'd be appropriate, Mr. Chair, I'd move we refer this to Appropriations.
It's been moved by Senator Knutson, seconded by Senator Nesselhoff, to move Senate Bill 145 to the Appropriations Committee. Secretary will call the roll, please.
Senator Gray, Gerstad?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Knutson?
Aye.
Carnos?
Aye. Having received a majority vote of the members elect, Senate Bill 145 moves to the Appropriations Committee. And that moves us to Senate Bill 165, the last item on our agenda today. We are in a capital-wide search for Senator Adelstein, so if you'll be patient, the committee will be at ease for a few moments as we continue to look for him. Thank you. It is an act to provide for the authorization of certain private, nonprofit, benevolent organization to assist in funding certain school curricula, activities, and programs. Senator Knutson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Knutson, State Senator from Sioux Falls. I'm a co-sponsor on this bill with Senator Adelstein. I don't know the particular motivation that Senator Adelstein had in bringing this bill. I think that it it really authorizes a practice that some school districts already engage in, and I think has their they do have the ability to do this. It really allows, just as our colleges and universities typically have a supporting foundation, in Sioux Falls we have a very a small organization called the Sioux Falls School District Foundation, I believe the title is, that is a 501c3 organization that does solicit in a very small way support from the community, and then provides assistance for special co-curricular, extracurricular type activities in the Sioux Falls school system. So I think that the school districts probably have this authority right now, but the bill, if adopted, would, I think, further encourage that activity, perhaps bring it to the top of mind. Again, I think as you've looked across America, as various educational institutions, certainly the colleges and universities being the best example, but school districts, as public funding has diminished, there's been increasing efforts to find private sources of philanthropic support. Obviously, the colleges in South Dakota have done a wonderful job. I think 20 years ago, a $10 million campaign would have been a big step for one of our regental institutions. USD, I think, raised $150 or $175. I believe SDSU is proposing $200 or $250 million. These are really enormous sums compared to where we were even 10 or 15 years ago. That has not trickled down yet in a big-time fashion to our high schools and grade schools, but I think you're seeing some beginning steps trying to make vehicles available for people that want to make philanthropic donations to their local educational institutions, and this bill would encourage this. As I say, I don't know any particular circumstance that brought Senator Adelstein to bring this bill, but I think this accurately describes the relationships between educational institutions and their supporting foundations. Be glad to try and answer questions.
Thank you, Senator Knudsen. Is there any further proponents for Senate Bill 165? Any further proponents? Any further proponents of Senate Bill 165? Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 165? Any further opponents to Senate Bill 165? Questions from the committee of proponents or opponents? Any questions from the committee? Short response, Senator Knudsen. Seeing none, the chair closes the public hearing on Senate Bill 165 and is now open for committee discussion and or action. Senator Gerstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill makes sense to me, and it's very, very familiar territory as a softball coach. And at RSN, I had to raise probably $10,000, $15,000, $25,000 a year to make my program go because I never got funded very much. And I always did it myself because I was I didn't want to give away any money to any professionals for fundraising. The baseball coach brought in a professional to help him fundraise, and that's what this is about. And all not-for-profit organizations these days are going to fundraising to privates. That's just how it is in today's society. And I see nothing wrong in the schools who are already fundraising. Booster clubs are fundraising like crazy. You have to. And it's for the good of our kids. So I see nothing wrong in bringing, you know, old professional help in to help them raise some dollars. There's no mandatory thing in there for schools to accept that. So I see nothing wrong in this bill, and I see everything good. I would like to move to pass.
There's been a motion by Senator Gerstad, do pass, seconded by Senator Nesselhoff. Any comment on the do pass motion? Any comment? Once again, the motion before us is do pass. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Gray?
Aye.
Gerstad?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Knudsen?
Aye.
Karnos?
Aye. Having received a majority vote of the members elect, Senate Bill 165 passes. Any further
Mr. Senator Chairman, Peterson. I just wonder, Senator Peterson, will work if we just stay in our chairs even if we are here.
If there's nothing for any betterment of the committee, I want to remind you, make sure you leave your binders. Thank you for your patience and understanding today. We kind of bounced all over. The chair will entertain a motion to adjourn. It's moved by Senator Olson, seconded by Senator Gray. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are adjourned. Thank you.